I opened my eyes and found Jean-Claude above us, over Micah, pressing us both into the floor. I had a moment of meeting his eyes, a moment to see the rage in that blind blue fire. Then his arms were around Micah and he was jerking the smaller man backwards. I sat up, watching them roll across the floor, fighting. Anger, frustration, and just sheer tiredness welled up inside me until there was no room for the ardeur. I was tired of fighting, so tired of it. I smelled blood like a hot spike through the center of my body. The smell was almost sexual. That was enough. I drew the Browning and sighted around the room. For a split second, I had the two of them at the end of the barrel. For a split second, it occurred to me. Then I moved the gun around the room, registering for the first time that there was no one left in the room but us. Good to know we didn't have an audience. I pointed the gun at the overstuffed white couch and fired. One of the small golden-silver pillows jumped upward with the impact. The noise was thunderous in the stone room, as if the heavy drapes caught the sound, held it around us. They froze. Micah's hands were claws, shredding across Jean-Claude's back, because that was all he could reach. Jean-Claude's face was buried in Micah's neck, his body wrapped around him so that everything vital was hidden while he tried to tear Micah's throat out. I sighted on them. Stop it! Stop it, both of you, or the next one goes in one of you! I swear by God that I will shoot you! Jean-Claude raised up, blood in a crimson wash across his mouth, chin, down his neck. There was so much blood it made me afraid to look at Micah's neck. Micah's claws stayed in Jean-Claude's back. I could see the tension as if every muscle were poised to drive the claws farther in.
The numérage holds me in place, ma petite. I cannot move.
Micah, let him up. Micah didn't move, and I guess I couldn't blame him, but I aimed the gun at his head because that was the only clear shot I had. I had a small spurt of panic that I might have to pull the trigger. Then a calmness welled over me, and I stood in that well of silence, that buzzing white noise that I went to when I killed. There was no feeling here. There was almost nothing here.
I will kill you, Micah.
My voice sounded as empty as I felt. Micah turned his head slowly to look at me. Blood flowed from the left side of his neck down his shoulder, his chest. He was drenched in his own blood. I could see more of it welling up, sliding down, but not constant. The blood pumped out with his pulse.
Shit!
Let him up, Micah. He's pierced your carotid. I lowered the gun and started to close the distance between them. Micah looked up at the vampire, still poised with his claws in Jean-Claude's flesh.
If I die, I want him to go with me.
It should be simple enough for a numérage of your power to heal such a small wound,
Jean-Claude said, still pressed around the other man's body, intimate. Micah withdrew the claws from Jean-Claude's back. Jean-Claude moved enough to prop himself up on his hands. I saw Micah tense a second before his arm swung in that unbelievable speed, so fast, so fast. Jean-Claude's throat hadn't even started to bleed when Micah's hand was back at his side. Then blood spilled in a fountain from Jean-Claude's throat.
Heal that, Micah said.
I was left standing there, watching them both bleed to death.
Motherfucking son of a bitch.
51. Jean-Claude half fell, half moved off of Micah. Blood sprayed in a red rain as he knelt on all fours, coughing, as if he were trying to clear his throat. It made the blood pump faster. I screamed, at first wordless, then I thought of something better. I screamed, Asher! Micah was already rolling in black fur, bones sliding in and out, muscles rolling in glimpses of pinkish flesh. He'd shapeshift and heal himself, but Jean-Claude couldn't shapeshift. I grabbed Jean-Claude's arm, and the moment I touched him, the marks flared between us. I was choking on my own blood, drowning in it. Strong hands were digging into my arms, fingers like cold stone. I blinked and found Jean-Claude's face glowing like carved alabaster with white light inside it. His skin glowed behind the coating of blood on his lower face, like rubies spread across diamonds. His eyes were pools of molten sapphire flame, if fire could be cold, achingly cold. A wind sprang from his body, from our bodies, and it was the cold of the grave that danced around us, fluttered our hair around our faces. We reached that cold power out, out to find Richard, and as before, the answer came against our skin. Jason was kneeling beside us. I didn't have time to marvel that he was healed. He touched us, and the mark that was Richard flared through his body, a warmth to dance with our coldness. And I knew Micah was kneeling behind me, furred and clawed. I felt him at my back the way I felt Jason, as if he were tied to us. Micah fell back, screaming, "No!" The tie was cut, and for a second I swayed, as if part of my support was gone. Then Nathaniel was there, and the world was solid again. We knelt, bound by flesh, magic, and blood. I watched the flesh in Jean-Claude's throat re-knit, reform, remake, reshape itself until the flesh was perfect and white, surrounded by a coating of wet blood. He'd healed so fast that the blood hadn't had time to dry. I smelled roses, not the faint perfume of potpourri, but thick, melt-on-your-tongue, old-fashioned garden roses, as if I were drowning in the cloying sweetness of them. It was like being dipped in honey that you knew had poison in it. Honey. Honey brown eyes. I remembered the pale honey brown of Belmore's eyes. "Do you smell the roses?" I asked. Jean-Claude turned drowning blue eyes to me.
"Roses? I smell nothing but the scent of your perfume and skin."
He scented the air.
"And blood."
Nathaniel and Jason were lost in the wonder of the power rush, but no one smelled roses but me. Once upon a time, I'd smelled perfume when a certain master vampire had been using her magic. My friend and fellow animator Larry Kirkland had smelled the perfume too, but no one else around us had been able to scent it. I looked into Jean-Claude's eyes, not with my sight, but with my magic, and found something. Something that wasn't him. It was subtle. What she'd done with me earlier had been like a sledgehammer between the eyes. This was a stiletto in the dark. I found the thread of her power coiled in him, and the moment my magic, my necromancy, hit it, the power uncoiled, opened, and it was like a window thrown wide. I saw her sitting in her room by fire and candlelight, as if electricity hadn't been invented. She was dressed in a white lace dressing gown, all that black hair falling around her, and a bowl of pink roses next to her pale hand. She turned those huge pale brown eyes to me, and I saw the surprise on her face, the shock. She saw me kneeling with the men as I saw her before her dressing table with her roses. I cut her off, cast her out of Jean-Claude as I'd cast her out of me earlier. It was easier because she hadn't tried to possess him, only to tamper with him, to be that dark voice in his ear that pushed him a little over the edge. Jean-Claude slumped suddenly, as if dizzy. He raised eyes to me that were as normal as they ever got, his usual midnight blue. There was fear on his face, no hiding it.
"I thought I saw Belle sitting before her mirror."
I nodded. "You did." He looked at me, and I think that only all our hands on him kept him from falling to the floor.
"She weakened my control of the ardeur."
"And your control of your temper," I said.
"What has happened?"
Asher asked. I looked up to find that everyone was back in the room.
"Any of this blood yours, ma'am?"
Bobby Lee asked. I shook my head. "Not a scratch on me."
"Then I guess we won't get blacklisted from the bodyguard union for leaving you alone with a shapeshifter and a vampire so they could fight over you."
He was shaking his head.
"The next time you ask us to leave you alone because it's your love life, we aren't going to listen to you."
I shook my head again.
"We'll talk about it later."
"No, ma'am," he said. "We won't."
I let the argument go. There was always time to fight later. Besides, he was too close to right. If I'd gotten between them at the wrong moment, who knew what accident might have happened? Jean-Claude spoke softly, voice urgent, to Asher.
They were speaking French, and I still didn't know enough to catch more than a word here and there. I heard bell clearly several times. In English, Asher said,
Do you remember Marcel?
Oui. He went mad one night and slew his entire household.
Including his human servant, Asher said, which is what killed him.
The two vampires stared at each other.
No one ever understood what had caused it, Jean-Claude said.
So fortuitous, Asher said. Only two nights before he would have fought Belle for her council seat.
Jean-Claude took Asher's offered hand and let him help him to his feet. Asher had to steady Jean-Claude with a hand on his elbow.
So fortuitous that many tried to prove she had poisoned him or some such, Asher said.
Jean-Claude nodded, passing a hand over his face as if he were still dizzy. I felt nothing, as if my necromancy protected me from whatever Belle had done to him.
The councils themselves tried to prove her at fault and failed, Jean-Claude said.
Did they hire a witch to look into the magic angle? I asked. I stood on my own just fine. Nathaniel and Jason got to their feet, again with no ill effects except for Jason's stupid grin, which he often wore after a power rush. The vampires looked at me.
No, Asher said. No one thought of it.
Why the hell not?
Because, ma petite, she should not be able to do what she did to a master of the city, even one of her own bloodline. That she could do this to a master of the city that was not her bloodline would be unthinkable.
Impossible, Asher added.
I think it's like real possible, I said. I caught her in the act.
Who's Belle?
Micah asked in his growling leopard voice. I turned to him slowly, and something must have shown on my face, because Merle moved in front of him, and suddenly the two were-rats were alert, starting to move up beside me. I don't know what I was about to say. Probably something really angry, because Micah beat me to it.
He pierced my jugular vein, Anita. I'm allowed to defend myself when someone tries to eat my throat out.
Remember, I'm his human servant. He dies, so might I. He stalked around Merle, gliding on bent legs and kitty cat feet.
So I'm just supposed to let him kill me?
No, I said. No, but your wound wasn't life-threatening. You proved that already. There's not a scratch on you now.
I healed it, yes, but not every shapeshifter could have healed it. A vampire wound is a lot like silver. It can kill, and most of us heal from those wounds like we were human.
He was standing very close to me, those green-gold eyes sparkling with anger.
He meant to kill me, Anita. Don't think he didn't.
He is right, ma petite. If he had not held me off more, I would have torn his throat out.
I turned back to Jean-Claude. What are you saying?
I saw him on top of you, and I was drowning in jealousy. I meant him harm, ma petite. He defended himself.
He didn't have to do that last blow. The fight had stopped. Jean-Claude looked past me at Micah, and there was something on his face. Respect, I think.
If he had done to me what I did to him, then I would have had no choice but to make my point.
He seemed to consider several words and settled for
strongly.
Strongly? He damn near slit your throat.
After I had tried to do the same to him.
I was shaking my head. No, I don't.
What, ma petite? Are you truly saying that if someone had torn your throat out, tried for your life, that you wouldn't have shot them?
I opened my mouth to argue, closed it, tried again, and stopped. I looked at him, then back at Micah, then back to Jean-Claude.
Well, damn.
The Nimerage has made his point, ma petite. He is willing to be accommodating up to a point. Beyond that point, there is no compromise.
Micah nodded, and the movement looked awkward in his furred body.
Yes.
You have the same rule, ma petite, as I do. The three of us merely have different places where the line is drawn. But the line is there for all of us.
How can you both be so reasonable about this? You both nearly just killed each other? They looked at each other, around me again, and there was something in that look. It was something masculine and arcane, as if the fact that I was a girl meant I wouldn't get it and they couldn't explain it to me. Which did explain it to
me. Oh, great. Great! You guys nearly kill each other, and that makes you buddies.
Jean-Claude gave that wonderful Gallic shrug, his face still covered in Micah's blood.
Let us say we have an understanding.
Micah agreed. Jesus, only men could get a friendship out of something like this.
You are friends with Monsieur Edward? Did you not both begin by trying to kill each other?
Jean-Claude asked. That's different, I said.
How?
I tried to argue, but stopped because I would have looked silly. Fine. Fine. So what, the two of you kiss and make up? They looked at each other, and again there was weight to the gaze, but it was a different weight. Shit, I said.
I think we begin by apologizing, Jean-Claude said. I am truly sorry for my lack of control.
Me too, Micah said, then added, and I'm sorry that I had to try and kill you.
It was interesting phrasing. Not I'm sorry I nearly killed you, but sorry I had to try and kill you. I was seeing Micah's ruthless streak. It wasn't really any bigger than my own, but it bothered me anyway. Wasn't sure why, but it did. I didn't know what to do, so I decided to move on. We had other business. Are you well enough to help get Damien out of his coffin?
I have used up all my reserves, ma petite. I will need to feed again.
He raised a hand.
But not the ardieu, merely blood.
Merely, he says.
I offered to let you feed on me earlier. The offer still stands,
Micah said.
No, Micah,
Merle said. Micah touched the taller man's arm.
It's all right.
Are you not afraid I will try and tear your throat out again? I would listen to your bodyguard.
You said we had an understanding.
That is true.
They were watching each other, and I could almost feel the testosterone rise. Micah smiled, or tried to. In the half-leopard form, it was a snarl of white fangs in black fur.
Besides, the next time you bite me like that, it better be foreplay, or I will kill you.
If it pleases you, my pleasure,
Jean-Claude said. He laughed then, that touchable sound that caressed my skin, made me shiver. Micah reacted to it, eyes wide. He'd never heard Jean-Claude's laugh before. If he thought the laugh was something special, well, the best truly was yet to come.
I thank you for your most generous offer, Jean-Claude said, but I prefer my food without fur.
No problem,
Micah said. Micah released Merle's arm and did that magically quick change. His tanned skin seemed to absorb the fur like rocks sinking into water. He stood naked and perfect, no mark of the fight on that smooth skin. Neither his clothing nor the tie in his hair had survived the change. But strangely, the hair fell straight around his face, as if it were affected by the fact that he'd pulled it back tight while it was still wet. The hair was still thick, but it framed his face better, was less overwhelming, so that you could still see the delicate bone structure. Those wondrous eyes. I heard someone catch their breath, and it wasn't me. I don't think it was Jean-Claude, but I wasn't sure. Didn't matter. Didn't want to know.
You are not even dizzy, are you?
Jean-Claude asked. Micah shook his head. Jean-Claude raised his eyebrows, lowered his eyes, fought to control his face until he could give a perfect blank expression, but it took him a few seconds.
I will clean this.
He made a vague motion at his gore-soaked clothes.
Before taking such a bounty, if that is all right.
Micah gave a small nod.
You are not taking a bath, I said.
I will be quick, ma petite.
You have never taken a quick bath in your entire life.
Asher laughed, then tried to smother it, but was only partially successful. He spread his hands.
Mon chéri, she is right.
Would I touch that for the first time covered in this?
Asher's face sobered instantly, like someone had thrown a switch. He turned that serious, blank face to stare at Micah, who stared back. If he was uncomfortable under the scrutiny, it didn't show. Asher sighed.
I suppose not.
And what are we supposed to do for the hour that it takes you to soak in the tub?
I asked.
I will be quick, ma petite. My word on it.
I crossed my arms over my stomach.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Ma petite, I have given my word.
On important stuff, your word is great, but when it comes to primping, you have no sense of time.
I thought that was the man's line,
Bobby Lee said. I glanced at him, then back to the vampire.
Couldn't prove it by me.
Bobby Lee laughed, but no one else did. 52. I sat on the white couch with its brand new bullet hole. Micah sat down beside me, and since he was naked, that was
interesting.
Uncomfortable and sort of titillating all at the same time. He kept insisting on trying to talk to me, and I found it hard to keep eye contact, and that was embarrassing. Bobby Lee and Chris stayed near me, hovering behind and to one side because I made them move from right behind me. I just don't like armed people at my back, not unless I know them really well. The were-rats were there to protect me. I believed they'd do the job because Raphael told them to, but I still didn't want them standing armed at my back. Merle lounged near the fireplace, keeping an eye on Micah and the other bodyguards. Gil was actually hiding in the corner, or nearly. Not a stable guy. The others milled around the room, except for Asher. He sat in the chair opposite the couch and watched us. He had shaken that glorious hair over his face so that only the perfect side was visible, and only one pale blue eye looked at us. His face showed nothing, but I could still feel the weight of his gaze, like a hand pushing. His face may have shown nothing, but he was giving us way too much attention. I might have asked why, but Jean-Claude walked back through the gap in the drapes. I had to check my watch. Only 20 minutes had passed. I'd dated him off and on for nearly 3 years. A 20-minute cleanup was nothing short of miraculous. Of course, his black hair was still wet and heavy. He hadn't taken time to blow-dry it. He was wearing one of my favorite robes, the black one with the black furred edging. The fur outlined a wonderful expanse of pale, perfect chest. The robe was open enough that the cross-shaped burn scar showed, and as he glided into the room, you caught glimpses of his upper stomach through the fur. The robe was very loosely tied, not at all the way he usually wore it. He had that smile on his face that said he knew he looked wonderful, and he knew just what effect he had on me. Then his gaze slid to Micah. I was close enough to see Micah's pulse speed up, jumping under the skin of his neck. He tried to meet Jean-Claude's eyes, but finally had to look down, and he blushed. His reaction made my pulse speed up. I looked back at Jean-Claude, gliding towards us, catching a glimpse of his pale feet under the black robe, against the white carpet. The look on his face was all for Micah. It made me go up on one knee, my butt against the arm of the couch. I felt oddly possessive, almost jealous, as if I should be defending Micah's honor. I'd never felt like this with Richard and Jean-Claude, but then Jean-Claude had never looked at Richard in quite that way, because Richard would have hurt him. Micah had nearly killed Jean-Claude over an insult that Richard would not have fought back over, yet here he sat, blushing, uncomfortable, but not angry. Jean-Claude was standing in front of us, so close that the furred hem of the robe brushed Micah's bare leg.
Have you changed your mind, mon minet?
Micah shook his head, then raised his face up to look at the vampire. There was both vulnerability and warning in that look.
I haven't changed my mind.
Bon.
Jean-Claude went to his knees in front of him.
You are powerful in your own right, and you are not my animal to call. I may not be able to cloud your mind and make this tasting a pleasure. You may be able to keep me out of your mind.
Micah nodded, thick hair falling around his face.
I understand.
Do you have a preference on where the blood is taken from?
The neck hurts much less, Micah said.
Jean-Claude raised an eyebrow.
You've done this before?
Micah gave a smile that managed not to be happy.
I've done a lot of things before.
Jean-Claude raised both eyebrows at that and looked at me. I shrugged.
Very well, mon minet.
He stood in one graceful movement, swinging the robe around him like a dress, giving the slightest glimpse of bare legs as he stalked behind the couch. He stopped just behind Micah, putting a hand on either of his shoulders. He didn't caress or squeeze, just rested his hands on that smooth, warm flesh for a moment.
Get on with it, Merle said.
Micah turned his head to look at the other were-leopard.
Merle?
One word, but it made the big man lean back harder on the fireplace, arms crossed over his chest, face sullen, a very unhappy bodyguard. But he did what he was told. Jean-Claude slid one arm around the front of Micah's shoulders, across his very upper chest. He used his free hand to smooth Micah's hair back, exposing the side of his face and the long, clean line of his throat. Micah moved his head a little to the side, giving Jean-Claude a better angle. The small movement was like a woman coming to her tiptoes for a kiss, a helpful movement. Maybe we could have a little privacy, I said, and it made both men look at me.
As you like, ma petite.
Everyone left except Merle, Bobby Lee, and Asher. They were the minimum that might be needed to keep us from killing each other. After what had just happened, I really couldn't work up a good argument for leaving us completely alone. When everyone had settled down, Jean-Claude turned back to Micah. Jean-Claude's fingers stroked Micah's hair so that it fell behind his ear, exposing the entire side of his face, the shape of his ear. He pressed the back of Micah's head gently against his chest, drawing the exposed neck in an even longer line. Micah was utterly passive, eyes closed, face peaceful. Only the pulse in his neck beating like a trapped thing gave lie to all that calmness. Jean-Claude bent over him, mouth open, lips going back, but even this close I got only the barest glimpse of teeth. He bit down, sharp, sudden. Micah gasped, breath catching in his throat. Jean-Claude's grip tightened at Micah's head, his shoulders, pressing him in against his body. I could see the muscles in Jean-Claude's jaws working, his throat swallowing convulsively. One of them was making small noises low in his throat, and I wasn't sure who it was. Jean-Claude reared back, bringing Micah with him, drawing him half over the couch. Micah cried out, his hands going to Jean-Claude's arm, holding on as the vampire rocked his body backwards. Jean-Claude moved his hand from Micah's face to his waist, as if he knew the other man wouldn't move away now. He held Micah, arms across his chest and waist, Micah's hands on Jean-Claude's arm. He stretched Micah's body backwards as he'd lengthened the man's neck earlier, so that Micah's body showed in a long, clean line, back curved against Jean-Claude's body, so that both of them were bowed backwards. I was left kneeling on the couch, staring up the line of Micah's nude body, seeing without doubt that what was happening was making his body happy. His face was slack with need, pleasure. His hands convulsed over Jean-Claude's arm and he half screamed, half shouted, God! Jean-Claude's body began to straighten up slowly. He eased Micah back over the couch. He raised his mouth from Micah's neck. His eyes were drowning blue, sightless, inhuman. His lips were full, red, but not with spilled blood, red like someone who's been kissing too much. He released Micah slowly, letting his body slide against the back of the couch until the were-leopard half collapsed on his side. His head spilled into my lap, and I jumped. Micah raised his head slowly, heavy. He propped himself up on one arm and turned unfocused eyes to me. His pupils were enormous, drowning black in the circle of his green-yellow eyes. I watched his pupils spiral downward to small dots so that the color almost overwhelmed them like a vampire's eyes. I could feel him staring at me, the weight of his gaze like something pushing against me. He leaned in towards me slowly, lips half parted. I stayed where I was, frozen, unsure what to do. It wasn't that he was any less lovely than he had been. It was just, oh hell, I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know what I wanted to do.
Didn't you need to get Damien out of his coffin?
Asher's voice came dry, making me draw back from Micah. Jean-Claude snarled at him, looking more inhuman than the entire time he was feeding. Asher stood in one smooth motion, like a puppet pulled up by strings,
Fine, but if you are going to have sex, then I don't have to watch.
I stood, Micah's hands sliding down my body as I moved away from the couch. I faced Asher. Look, I am so far over my comfort zone right now that I can't think, but I'll tell you one thing. I am not going to salve your male ego while the little voice in my brain is still screaming, run away, run away. So put the attitude on ice, Asher. I can't deal with it right now. He was suddenly vibrating with anger, his eyes like icy blue pools.
So sorry that my discomfort annoys you.
Fuck you, Asher. He was suddenly moving forward in a blur of speed. I backed up so fast that I fell against the couch. Micah caught me or I'd have fallen to the floor. I had time to draw a gun or a knife, but I didn't even try. Asher wasn't trying to hurt my body, just my feelings. He bent at the waist, looming over me and Micah, though I think that part was accidental. He put a hand on either side of us and leaned into my face, so close that I had to pull back to focus on those chilling blue eyes.
Don't offer things you're not willing to do, ma chérie, because that is annoying.
He stood up abruptly and stalked from the room. Micah's voice was soft.
What was all that about?
His hands were still on my arms, half holding me, protective. I shook my head.
Ask Jean-Claude.
I pushed to my feet.
I'm going to go get Damien.
I will accompany you, ma petite.
Fine. I started walking. I could feel them following me, feel them both behind me. I almost turned around to see if they were holding hands, but if they were, I wasn't ready to see it. Bobby Lee trailed behind without a word. Smart man. 53. The room was bare stone walls. There was no pretense of comfort. It was the vampire's version of prison, and it looked like one. There were half a dozen coffins sitting on bare, raised platforms with silver chains around them, waiting to be raised and locked in place with crosses. The only crosses in the room were on the two closed coffins. Two? Two chained coffins. Damien was in one. Who the hell was in the other?
Which one is your boy? Bobby Lee asked.
I shook my head. Don't know.
I thought you were supposed to be this boy's master.
That's the theory.
Then shouldn't you be able to tell which box is which?
I glanced at him, gave a small nod. Point. I looked back at the door, but it was still empty, just us. I didn't know where everyone had gone to, and I was so trying not to speculate on what might have distracted Micah and Jean-Claude. I tried to concentrate on who was in the coffins, but I couldn't. Once upon a time, I could sense Damien even before he woke in his coffin, but I got nothing from either coffin except that there were vampires in them. I went to the closest coffin. The wood was pale and smooth. Not the most expensive, but not cheap either. Heavy, well made. I passed my hands across the smooth wood, fingers caressing the coolness of the chains. Something banged against the lid of the coffin. I jumped. Bobby Lee laughed. I frowned at him, then turned back to the coffin, but I wasn't touching it anymore. I knew it wasn't possible with a blessed cross attached to the lid, but I'd had this sudden image of an arm tearing through the wood and grabbing me. Damien was supposed to be homicidally crazy. Better cautious than dead. I put my hands just above the coffin, not quite touching. I drew my necromancy like drawing a breath and breathed it out through my body, not exactly through my hands, but everywhere. The necromancy was part of what I was, not just who I was. I started to push my power into the coffin, but it was pulled in like water pouring into a hole. The water falls down because gravity pulls it down and there is no stopping it. It's natural, automatic. My necromancy spilled into that coffin and into Damien. I felt him lying in the dark, his body pressed against the thin satin. I saw his eyes stare up into mine, felt something flare inside him, something that recognized my power, but I couldn't feel him. There was no personality there, no Damien.
I knew it was him, but there was no thought in him. Nothing but that tiny spark of recognition, and barely that. I tried to reconcile the thing I felt to what I knew Damien had been, and it was like he had become something else. I said a quick prayer, and I didn't even feel odd praying to God about a vampire. I'd had to give up my narrow ideas of God a long time ago, or give up church and everything I held dear about my religion. The deal was, if God was okay with what I was doing, then I had to be too. "Where is everybody?" I asked it aloud, so Bobby Lee answered.
"I don't know, but if you'll come with me, we'll go look."
I shook my head, staring at the other coffin. Who was in there, locked in the dark? I had to know, and if I could, I'd get them out. I didn't approve of torture, and being locked in a coffin where you would never starve to death but always go hungry, never die of thirst but burn with the need for liquid, be trapped in a space so small you couldn't even turn onto your side, were all good definitions of torture in my book. I liked most of Jean-Claude's vamps, and I wouldn't leave them like this, not if I could persuade him that they'd been punished enough. I was pretty stubborn about things like that, and Jean-Claude was wanting to please me right now. I could probably get whoever it was out. I'd do my best. But who was it? Admittedly, there were vampires that I'd make more of an effort to save, just like people. I went to stand beside the other coffin and pushed my magic into it. I had to push this time. It wasn't like Damien. Whatever was in this box didn't welcome me in. It wasn't anyone I had a connection with. I felt something, and I knew it was a kind of undead, but it didn't feel like a vampire. It felt emptier than that. It was fully dark outside. There should have been movement, life of a sort, but there was nothing. I pushed farther into the thing and found the faintest answering pulse. It was as if whatever was in there was a lot more dead than alive, yet not truly dead. A sound turned me towards the door. Jean-Claude glided into the room, his robe tied tight now, like a signal that he was ready to get down to business. He was alone. "Where's Micah?" I asked.
"Jason has taken him to get some clothing. They should be able to find something that will fit him."
"Who is in this coffin?" I'd almost said what, but I was betting it was a vampire, just not like one I'd ever sensed before. His face was already careful, neutral.
"I would think, ma petite, that you have enough to be concerned over with Damien."
"You know and I know that I am not moving until I know who's in here." He sighed.
"Yes, I know."
He actually looked down at the floor as if he were tired, and because his face showed nothing, the gesture looked half-finished, like bad acting. But I knew that for him to be working so hard at keeping anything off his face, only to let his body betray him, meant he was very unhappy. Which meant that I was really not going to like the answer. "Who, Jean-Claude?"
"Gretchen," he said,
finally meeting my eyes. His face told me nothing. The one word, empty. Once upon a time, Gretchen had tried to kill me because she wanted Jean-Claude for herself. When did she get back in town?
"Back?"
He gave it that little lilt that made it a question. "Don't be coy, Jean-Claude. She came back to town, still out for my blood, and you put her in here, so when?" His face became like a sculpture, except with less movement in it. He was hiding as much of himself as he could, and the shields were like armor.
"I say again, ma petite, she had gone nowhere."
"What's that supposed to mean?" He looked at me with that perfect face, so unreadable.
"It means that from the moment you watched me put her in the coffin in my office at Guilty Pleasures, she has always been here."
I blinked, frowned, opened my mouth, closed it, tried again, failed. I must have looked like a landed fish because I couldn't think of a damn thing to say. He just stood there, not helping. I found my voice and it was breathy. "You're saying that Gretchen has been in a coffin for 3 years? He just looked at me. He'd stopped breathing. There was no sense of movement to him at all, as if I looked away, I'd never find him again. He'd be invisible. "Answer me, damn it! Has she been in a coffin for 3 years?
He gave the smallest of nods.
Jesus! Jesus!
I paced the room because if I didn't do something physical, I was going to hit him or start screaming. I finally ended up standing in front of him, hands and fists at my sides.
You bastard!
My voice was a hoarse whisper, squeezed out of my throat because to do anything else would have had me ranting at him.
She tried to kill my human servant, who I also loved. Most masters would have simply killed her.
That would have been better than this,
I said, voice still a hissing whisper.
I doubt Gretchen would agree.
Let's open the coffin and see, I said.
He shook his head.
Not tonight, ma petite. I knew you would feel this way, and we can try and release her, though I have poor hope for it.
What's that supposed to mean?
She was not the most stable of women when she went in. This will not have strengthened her grasp of reality.
How could you have done this to her?
I told you before, ma petite, she earned her punishment.
Not 3 years, I said.
My voice was beginning to sound normal again. I wasn't going to hit him. Great.
3 years for nearly killing you. I could leave her in for 3 more years, and it would not be punishment enough.
I'm not going to argue whether the punishment was justified or excessive or anything. All I can say is that I want her out of there. I won't let her stay in there another night. There's barely anything left now. He glanced at the coffin.
You have not opened it. How do you know what is inside?
I wanted to know how Damien was. I used a little magic to explore what was inside both coffins.
And what did you discover?
He asked. That my necromancy recognizes Damien. That Damien isn't there. It's like his personality is missing. Whatever made him him is missing.
Jean-Claude nodded. With the vampires that are not master strength and never will be, it is often the master of the city or their creator that enables them to exist as strong presences. Cut off from that, they often fade.
Fade, he called it. Like he was talking about curtains that had been in sunlight too long instead of a living being. Well, a sort of living being.
Well, Gretchen is way past faded. There's almost nothing left. We leave her in even 1 more night and she may not be there.
She cannot die.
Maybe not, but the damage.
I shook my head.
We have to get her out now, tonight, or we might as well put a bullet in her.
Leave Damien in for 1 more night, and I will agree to release Gretchen.
No, I said. Damien is like one of those feral vamps. The longer he's like this, the greater the likelihood that he'll never be anything else.
Do you really believe that 1 more night will damage him irreparably?
Jean-Claude asked.
I don't know, but I know that if I wait until tomorrow night to get him out and the damage is permanent, I'll always wonder if that 1 extra night made the difference.
Then we have a problem, ma petite. A hot bath is being run now in preparation for 1 released vampire. We only have 1 place suitable here at the circus for such a recovery.
Why a bath?
I asked.
They must be brought back to life, to warmth. The process must be done carefully, or the risk is one of true death.
Wait a minute. A vamp can be in the coffin locked away forever and never die, but getting them out can kill them? That doesn't make sense.
They have adjusted to the coffin, ma petite. To bring them out after a length of time is a shock to their system. I have seen vampires die of it.
I knew he wouldn't lie. He was too unhappy about having to say it.
So we throw them both in the same tub. No big.
But it is a big, ma petite. The attention and power needed to bring one back must not be divided between them. It will take all that I have to bring 1 at a time back. I cannot divide my efforts without risking them both.
I know that you made Gretchen, but you didn't make Damien. His ties to you as master of the city broke when he became mine, so you aren't his master in any way. I am.
Yes, he said.
Then isn't it my job to bring Damien back? My mystical connection with him, not yours?
If you are truly his master, another vampire, I would agree. But you are, for all your talents, still human. There are things you cannot do for him, and there are many things you will not know to do for him.
Like what?
He shook his head.
It is a complex process, requiring specialized skills.
And you have those skills, I said.
Do not sound so skeptical, ma petite. I was part of our mistress's emergency crew, he said. She would punish others, and we would be left to deal with the aftermath. It was often her way.
We? I asked.
Asher and myself.
So Asher knows how to do this, I said.
Oui, but he is not Damien's master either.
No, but I am. If Damien still has one, I'm it. So you take care of Gretchen, you loan me Asher, and he tells me what to do for Damien.
After his little display in the other room, you would trust him?
I'd trust him with my life, and so would you.
But not our hearts, Jean-Claude said.
Why did it bother him so much to see you with Micah? I asked. He's seen almost as bad with Richard and me.
I believe that you as my human servant and Richard as my wolf to call were possessions, mine by right, and you were already in place when Asher arrived in St. Louis. Micah is not my animal to call. He has no ties directly to me. He is your Nimirage, but nothing to me.
And? I asked.
Asher was willing to share me with you and Richard because you were mine. But this Nimirage is simply another man that has my favor, when Asher does not.
Micah doesn't have your favor, exactly. Yet. Jean-Claude gave a small smile.
True, but Asher does not see it that way.
If it weren't for my social qualms, would you be doing Asher right now? He laughed, an abrupt sound that didn't dance along my body. It just filled his face with glee. The closest I'd ever seen to real laughter from him.
Social qualms. Ma petite, that is precious.
I frowned at him. Just answer the question. The laughter faded, almost like a person, instead of that abrupt change he usually did.
Asher and I would likely have come to an understanding if it would not have cost me you, ma petite.
An understanding. Now who's being coy? I said. He gave that Gallic shrug that meant everything and nothing.
You would not be comfortable with brutal honesty, ma petite.
Fine, if I could have stomached it, would you have taken Asher back as your lover by now?
He thought about it, then finally, I do not know, ma petite.
I know you love him.
Oui, but that does not mean we could be lovers again. When he and I were happiest, it was with Juliana. You might be able to stand us as lovers out of your sight, as long as we did not act like lovers in front of you. I do not think you would like watching Asher and me hold hands in front of you.
Put that way, he was right. What are you saying?
I am saying that Asher deserves better than a hidden relationship where we could never show public affection for fear of hurting you. I would rather give him up completely to someone else, male or female, than force him to play second or lower to you forever.
I opened my mouth to say that I liked Asher, even loved him in a way, but I didn't, because I didn't want to raise the possibility of a true ménage à trois. What I'd seen with Micah and Jean-Claude had already bugged me a lot. I just couldn't deal with two men and me. Yeah, it was the Midwestern middle-class value system, but it was the way I looked at the world. I couldn't change that, could I? And if I could, did I want to? I didn't know. I just didn't know. The fact that the thought didn't make me run screaming into the night bothered me, but not as much as I thought it should have. 54. Jean-Claude gave Jason the keys to the locks on the silver chains. He'd spent the last hour explaining everyone's job. Jason would be the appetizer. Oh, sorry. Gretchen's first feeding. It couldn't be someone human because the first feeding after being in the box could be quite traumatic. Jean-Claude's choice of words, not mine. So basically, Jason got to be point man and take the first damage. Then it was Jean-Claude's turn to donate blood. The vamp's master gave a feeding and rebound the vamp to the blood oaths that connected them either to the master of the city, their bloodline, their maker, or in Jean-Claude's case, all three.
All three was better. The stronger the original connection, the greater chance the vampire had of healing the damage. That last part made me worry for Damien. I wasn't his maker, I wasn't his bloodline, or his master of the city. I wasn't sure exactly what I was to him. To that question, Jean-Claude had said,
"You are his master, ma petite. Whatever that means for a necromancer, that is what you are to him. If taking blood from you doesn't reconnect him, then Asher will try. Failing that, they will fetch me from Gretchen. Damien must rebind his ties to one of us, or he is lost."
"Define lost," I said.
"The madness may be permanent."
"Shit."
"Oui."
But first, Gretchen, so that I could see it done, understand the process better. Jason unlocked the chains. They fell off the coffin and clunked against the wood, a dull, harsh sound. It made me jump. Gretchen had tried to kill me when she only thought I was dating Jean-Claude. She might rise from the coffin bent on killing me. I'd been her advocate, demanding Jean-Claude let her out. Now, as Jason undid the locks on the lid itself, my chest was tight, and I had to fight to keep my hand away from my gun. It would be stupid, not to mention ironic, if I had to kill her the moment she rose. I could just hear Jean-Claude's dry,
"And this is an improvement, ma petite?"
I said a quick prayer that it wouldn't come to that. I didn't want to kill her. I wanted to save her. Wanting to do the last didn't mean I wouldn't do the first, but it did mean I would try to avoid it. Jason raised the lid slowly. Not because it was heavy, but because I think he was scared too. The idea of being Gretchen's first meal had made him laugh. That anticipatory sound that is half grown-up male and half little boy. The sound that men reserve for things that combine sex and usually sports, cars, technology, or danger. Depends on your man. I'm sure there are men out there that would give that purring, excited laugh at the thought of gardening or poetry, but I haven't met them. Might be an interesting change, though. The lid went back in that halfway position that coffin lids do. Nothing moved. It was just Jason standing there in his cut-off jean shorts, bare back to the room. Gretchen didn't come bounding out and eat anybody, and I let out a breath I hadn't known I was holding. Jason stayed there, gazing down, unmoving, hands frozen on the lid. He finally turned towards the rest of us, and there was a look on his face that I'd never seen. It was a mixture of horror and pity. His spring blue eyes were wide, and there was a glitter of tears, I thought. Jason and Gretchen hadn't been close. The reaction couldn't be personal. What was in that coffin to put that look on Jason's face? I was moving forward without realizing it.
Ma petite, do not go closer.
I looked at him. What's the matter with her? Why does Jason look so stricken? Jason answered,
I've never seen anything like this.
I had to see now. I had to. I kept walking towards the coffin. Jean-Claude met me, blocked my path.
Please, ma petite, do not go closer.
I'm supposed to watch the process, right? I'm going to have to see what she looks like sooner or later, Jean-Claude. Might as well be sooner. He studied my face as if he'd memorize it.
I did not anticipate that she would be so...
He shook his head.
You will not be happy with me after you see her.
You don't know what she looks like either, I said.
No, but Jason's reaction tells me many things I do not wish to know.
What's that supposed to mean? He just stepped aside.
Gaze upon her, ma petite, and when you have forgiven me, come back to me.
Forgiven him? I did not like the phrasing. I'd been scared of Gretchen pouncing out and trying to kill me. Now I was more frightened of looking at her, of what horror awaited me inside that coffin. My pulse was trying to climb out of my throat and I couldn't breathe past it. Jason's face, Jean-Claude's sorrow, and the utter stillness from the coffin had left me so scared my mouth was dry. Jason moved to one side, turning away from the coffin, leaning his butt against it, arms hugging his sides. He looked pale and ill. I wondered if he'd changed his mind about letting Gretchen touch him. I stood just far enough back that I couldn't see into the coffin. I didn't want to see something so horrible that it made Jason pale. I didn't want to see it.
but I had to. I stepped up to the coffin, like stepping up to the plate, knowing that the ball coming at you is going 100+ miles an hour and you have no chance to swing. My eyes couldn't make sense of what I saw at first. My mind simply refused to understand. It's a safety feature that we all have. If something is too horrendous, sometimes our brain just says, nope, not going to see this, not going to record this, nope, it would break us. But if you stare long enough, the mind says, well, damn, we're not turning away, and finally, you'll see it. And once you see it, you'll never be able to unsee it. It lay against white satin so that the dry, brown color was very stark, painfully outlined. It looked like a wizened mummy, one of those bodies they find every once in a while in the desert, where the dryness makes natural mummies. The brown skin had molded to the bones. There was no muscle under it, just bones and skin. The mouth was open wide as if the jaw hinge had broken. The fangs were dry, but white like a skull. The entire head had dried down to just the skull covered by a light coating of brown skin. Patches of bright blonde hair clung to that skull, and the bright color made it worse, more obscene somehow. The eyes opened. I jumped, but the eyes that stared back at me were filled with something brown and dried like big raisins. They blinked once, slowly, and a sound like wind sighing came out of the mouth. I fell back from the coffin, fell to my knees. Jason grabbed my arm, drew me to my feet. I shook his hand off and went for Jean-Claude. He stood there, face patient, empty. I hit him without ever breaking stride. Maybe he expected me to stop, take a stance, but I hit him in the face, closed fist, like it was a continuation of the movement of my body. I twisted my fist, my whole body into it, and he was suddenly on the floor, looking up at me, with blood on his face. 55. You bastard! You fed off her energy while she was in there! I had to stalk away from him to keep from kicking him. Some things you did not do, some lines you did not cross. He touched the back of his hand to his mouth.
What if I had nothing to do with it?
What if? I came to stand over him. What if? Are you really going to try and tell me that you didn't feed off of her? I pointed back towards the coffin and must have glanced back, because the next thing I knew he had my legs, and I was suddenly falling towards the ground. I slapped the hard stones with my arms like I'd been taught in judo. That took some of the impact, kept my head from hitting the stone floor, but it took concentration. By the time my body hit the ground, Jean-Claude was on top of me, pinning my arms to the floor with his forearms, the rest of his body trapping the rest of mine. Get off of me!
No, ma petite. Not until you hear me out.
I tried to raise my arms, not because I thought I could out-muscle him, but because I had to try. I've never been able not to struggle, even when I know it's a lost cause. I was able to raise my arms a little, not enough to get away, but enough to make him bear down, enough to widen his eyes, enough to make him tense. Good to know the marks were helping me gain useful things like strength, and not just crap. Blood was a bright surprise against that pale skin. The blood dripped from an open cut on his mouth.
How do you know that this is not what all vampires would be reduced to after years?
I glared up at him because I couldn't do much else.
Liar!
How are you so certain?
He pressed himself harder against me, for emphasis, I think, because he wasn't happy to be there. His body was all about anger, not sex.
How do you know, Anita?
He'd used my real name.
I'm a necromancer, remember?
His face clearly said he didn't believe the answer was that simple, and he was right. I was remembering my visit to New Mexico and what I'd learned there. A monster rising above the bar in a club in Albuquerque. It rose above the bar in a thin line of pale flesh, like the rising of a crescent moon. Then a face came into view. It was a woman's face with one eye gone stiff and dry like some kind of mummy.
Face after face, rose brown and withered, like a string of monstrous beads strung together with pieces of body, arms, legs, and thick black thread like gigantic stitches, holding it all together, holding the magic inside. It rose up and up until it towered against the ceiling, curving like a giant snake to stare down at me.